Oman, Washington, Friday, January 16th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, the Hudson River Miracle. We'll speak with David Field, the America's editor at Airline Business Magazine, about the problems that afflicted U.S. Airways Flight 1579 Thursday before it crash-landed in the Hudson River just west of Manhattan. And we'll find out just how much skill was required by the pilot, co-pilot, and crew to make sure that there were no fatalities on that flight. Also in this edition, a farewell from the president. George W. Bush addresses the American people from the White House for the final time Thursday night. We'll bring you some extended excerpts as the president looks back over an eventful 8 years. Plus, on to the courtroom. We'll talk with Annette Meeks, longtime Republican activist in Minnesota, about a suit that she and other Minnesotans filed against the final results from the Minnesota U.S. Senate recount. And a George W. Bush double shot. The Capitol steps and the soon-to-be-retiring president out of office in style. All of that, plus Friday's top news, follows our discussion with David Field about the Hudson River miracle, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is David Field, the America's editor at Airline Business Magazine. We want to get his thoughts and reaction as America is still marveling over the fact that none of the 150 passengers or flight crew members were killed when U.S. Airlines Flight 1579 made a crash landing in the Hudson River on Thursday, just west of Manhattan. And David, as we get going here, first of all, is there a precedent for something like this, a plane this size with this many people on board making a water landing with no fatalities?
There isn't. There is one other case, and that took place in the 1970s, and it took place behind the Iron Curtain, so we don't know the details, and we don't know if everyone got out all right. There have been many water landings, and there have been water landings in which people walked away or swam away, but this is the first documented, proven, no-fatality water landing of a large airplane that I know of anywhere in the jet age. So it's all the more remarkable.
Well, certainly adds to the explanation that this really is a miraculous event that saved the lives of those people on board as well as the crew. The problem, of course, from what we're hearing, happened very shortly after takeoff when both of the engines on this plane were struck with birds. How frequently does this happen, and how much damage do birds usually do?
Birds striking both engines or all the engines on an airplane, that's fairly rare. But birds striking airplanes or airplanes striking birds is actually pretty common. It happens quite a few hundred times a day. It happens a great deal with small airplanes, with general aviation. It usually doesn't happen where the birds fly into the engines and create the problems that they do. But the U.S. Agriculture Department has a special committee on bird strikes, and it works in cooperation with the FAA and Fish and Wildlife and so on. And they have very detailed documentation of hundreds of bird strikes a day. And in the last year, something like 9 pretty serious incidents in which birds were ingested by aircraft engines and created problems. Fortunately, none of them were crashes, but they were serious enough to cause the airplane to declare an emergency and to turn back to the airport. There's a particularly horrifying piece of videotape that's making the rounds right now of a charter flight from Thomson Fly, which is a UK-based charter company. 757 taking off. Bird goes into the right-hand engine, and you see flames coming out, not just one spurt of flames, but flames coming out continuously for 10 or 20 seconds. Birds can do enormous damage to an engine because the speed you're talking about, you know, you're talking about an airplane going 200 miles an hour, a bird going at a fairly high speed, and the blades of the jet's fan turning at a very high rate of speed. It's not like running into a wild turkey on a country road. It's really serious. And the bird basically destroys the blades of the turbine. As you probably know, a jet flies by having a spinning turbine with 40 or 50 very precisely designed blades on it going around at very high speeds. And when a bird gets in there, the bird basically has the same effect as a solid object. As a matter of fact, when they're designing and testing engines, what they do is they take a frozen bird, they take frozen turkeys, and throw them into the engine just to see how the blade reacts and how the blade takes the equivalent of a bird strike. So, yeah, it's pretty serious stuff.
David, does the size of the bird matter? It sounds like this was a flock of geese, which was bigger than your average bird. So is that going to create even bigger problems than otherwise?
Oh, yeah, particularly if it was multiple birds. If it was a whole flock of geese, that's going to create serious problems. Big question in my mind is exactly where this airplane hit the birds. Did it hit them shortly after takeoff, which is the most likely thing, because New York's LaGuardia is right next to wetlands, the kind of area where birds like to hang out. So you have to say, is that where the accident occurred, or did it occur somewhere else? Bear in mind that this airplane was in the sky for 3 or 4 minutes before it began losing altitude seriously and made its turn down over the Hudson River.
David, the plane involved is an Airbus 320. Obviously, it can hold about 150 passengers. Did the size of the plane help or hurt the pilot's ability to bring this bird down as safely as possible?
You know, in a lot of ways, he was lucky that it wasn't a bigger airplane, simply because a bigger airplane would have been harder to control and could well have struck surrounding objects, surrounding buildings. So in that sense, he was lucky. I think what's important is that this is a relatively new airplane. It's built to be crash-resistant. The Airbus fuselage, much like the fuselage on the Boeings now coming out of the production lines, is built with lots of reinforcement underneath, with stronger materials underneath, all of which are designed to make it withstand a very hard landing or a crash. And bear in mind that when you land in the water, it's the same as landing on the ground in terms of the dynamics. He came in at, 80 or 90 miles an hour, and you hit the water, it's almost the same as landing on a runway. The main reason why he landed on the water is he realized he couldn't make it all the way to Teterboro. You might recall the reports that say that as the pilot was making his turn southward over the Hudson River, he radioed that he saw a small airport, was going to try to make it. And then a couple of seconds later, he decided to land in the river. He probably did not have the thrust. He didn't have the engines running, so he didn't have the power to get over to Teterboro. And in some ways, for all of us, it's just a good thing that he went into the river, because it's a highly built-up area. And if he had landed short of Teterboro, which is surrounded by highways, by office buildings, and is very near some refineries, that could have been a disaster, and certainly would not have been good for the people on the airplane.
Well, as you just mentioned, David, the pilot here having to make a split-second decision on whether to try and make it to Teterboro or to try and bring the plane down as safely as possible in the Hudson River. Obviously, the choice was kind of made for him when he realized he couldn't make it to the airfield. When you're in a split second like this, and I'm sure you've talked with pilots and other airline officials in the past about near-death situations like this, what are the first priorities in terms of bringing it down as safely as possible?
First priority is to avoid hitting things on the ground. If you hear the tapes of planes that didn't make it, you sometimes hear the pilots saying, let's go into a park, let's go into the woods, let's try to get it away from built-up areas. And I'm sure that in Captain Sullenberger's mind, this was one of the issues. But this guy just showed really superb piloting skills. And you got to also give credit to the first officer. I mean, there are two seats up in the cockpit for a reason. And I suspect that they were both flying the airplane as it went down into the water. But this guy just did a really good job, and he's being awfully modest about it. You know, he hasn't done any public appearances. He's avoided appearing with the mayor of New York and the governor of New York at public ceremonies and the like. And from my perspective, that's all the more respectable. It shows he's not a grandstander. It shows he's professional. And it shows that, in a lot of ways, he was just doing his job, but he did it awfully well.
He certainly did. And David, we've heard a lot that even though this is extremely rare to happen in air travel remains extremely safe. There is routine testing and retraining for pilots and crews for this very type of thing. And of course, whenever we board the plane, we hear the announcement, usually ignoring it, about the event of a water landing. But how much training do pilots and flight crews really go through to make sure that they do know what's the right process to follow in case this does happen?
Much more than you would think. And the cabin attendants, the so-called stewardesses, and stewards, the flight attendants, go through this recurrent training as well. They go through it a couple times a year with simulators, the computer-driven simulators that we have now. It's relatively easy to get the time to do this and relatively realistic. Pilots go through it 2, 3, 4 times a year. Flight attendants go through it, and they most airlines have a mock-up of a fuselage or even an older airplane, just a big old airplane. And they use that for training. It's designed so that you get the people out within a minute. And these flight attendants must have done their job awfully well to get all those people out as quickly as they got them out. It's just a very good thing that the airplane landed as near as it did to a ferry boat terminal, because you may have seen the pictures. The ferry boats were the first ones on the scene. They came across from New Jersey because the plane landed directly opposite their terminal.
And, David, really quickly, most of the folks said there was really no panicking in any large degree. People were certainly scared and tense, but no chaos on board. Is that due to just the fact that people were amazed that this was happening, or is that also a tribute to the crew?
Tribute to the crew, but I think it's just an incident of it happened so quickly no one had time to panic. In a lot of ways, this is a miracle, and I think people just realized that they were awfully lucky and sat back and let God take the commanding role.
David, we'll have to call time there, unfortunately. Thanks very much for being with us and helping us learn more about exactly what happened on Thursday.
Thanks very much.
David Field is the America's editor at Airline Business Magazine. This is Dateline Washington.